Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Dr. Aditya Bhosle joining me here on KDKA after physician scientists at the UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute have put together a paper that was published on circulation arrhythmia and electrophysiology. Dr. Bhosle is a cardiac electrophysiologist and assistant professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh, and we are delighted to have him joining us here on the program. Doctor, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
I want to start with your explanation to us, because people hear the term of atrial fibrillation, or they hear even the shorter version when people talk about AFib. And I think that people say, well, yeah, I think I know what that is. Help us to understand, though, from you, from somebody who deals with cardiac medicine all the time, how do you define AFib as it relates to this paper?
Rick, that's a great question. I think atrial fibrillation is a very common problem. So millions of Americans have atrial fibrillation. It's an irregular heart rhythm that arises from the upper chambers of the heart and causes symptoms in most patients of palpitations or shortness of breath or even chest pain, and increases risk for stroke and congestive heart failure, especially in the older population, in somebody in their 70s or 80s. Very little actually was known about atrial fibrillation in the younger patients.
Sometimes if someone is having a physical done, that a physician might say, I hear a little something there, you know, a little flutter, I hear something, but they may not make that much of it at a young age. But if somebody is, like you said, 70 or 80, it may be a larger concern, because if the lower chambers are not getting rid of all the blood, perhaps it can end up clotting, create a problem for stroke or things like that. Why are you more concerned now and looking at it more in younger people?
I think because we are seeing younger patients, and this research was driven by the clinical observation that we do see a large number of younger patients who have atrial fibrillation, and we were curious to understand why that's the case and what are the factors that drive the occurrence in a younger population. Traditionally, it's been described that maybe only 1-2% of the general younger population would have atrial fibrillation. And even from, say, the Kaiser data from California, the numbers are about 10% or so estimated under 65 years of age. But we see that nearly a quarter of the patients who seek attention for atrial fibrillation in the UPMC system were less than 65 years of age.
Hmm. You're looking at historic data within the UPMC system, approximately not quite 70,000 patients over a 10-year span. What were you looking for? Were you looking for people who had known AFib, or you were looking at them for something else and saying, is there something else going? What were you trying to find?
we were trying to identify in patients who have atrial fibrillation, how did they do and why did some patients do worse than others? And does having atrial fibrillation mean that your prognosis is worse off if we compare to the U.S. standards, the CDC data on survival for age and gender matched population, or even among control populations, maybe a million patients seen in the UPMC system without atrial fibrillation? How do these patients do? And we found that they don't do as well. There's increased risk for mortality. There's increased risk for hospitalizations, for complications like heart failure or stroke. And that's true for younger populations as well. So I think that part has not been studied or clearly understood in the past.
When you compare the differences, I mean, in terms of what you found within your UPMC population, that it was almost a quarter, I'm sorry, a little more than a quarter of them, as opposed to what is commonly thought, which is 2%. I mean, that is a massive, massive difference. Is that an anomaly based on something that's happening here where the footprint of UPMC is? Or do you think this is something that needs to be investigated to see, is this the case everywhere? Is our perception of 2% prevalence grossly underreported?
I think you're onto something, Rick, here. I think we have underdiagnosed, and the population prevalence, not even here, but maybe in the South, is increasing over time. And that's true for not just atrial fibrillation, but the risk factors that often precede atrial fibrillation, like diabetes, like smoking, like hypertension, or undiagnosed sleep apnea. All those risk factors that drive the occurrence of atrial fibrillation are in rise in the U.S. population. So I don't think it's a surprise that we are seeing more of it in the younger population now.
When you take a look at this, Dr. Bosley joining us from the University of Pittsburgh, where he's an assistant professor and also works in the area of cardiac electrophysiology, joining us to talk about research that has just come from the UPMC team. What next? As you now have this information published, what do you do with that? Are there colleagues that you have in other parts of the country that you would like to talk to and ask them to do similar work? Or is there something else you'd like to do?
So I think that's very important. I think this forms the foundation of what needs to be done next, is studies that figure out what happens to these patients who, you know, follow the advice and do well, those that control their blood pressure, those that lose weight. If they, then we have a plan. We have a game plan in terms of advice that we can give them, saying, lose weight, do X, Y, and Z, and the outcomes will be better. The Australians have shown that in a limited way, but I'm not aware of any data from the U.S. that suggests that lifestyle measures can improve outcomes in atrial fibrillation in a robust manner. And I think that's the next step for us in terms of interventions. We often think about atrial fibrillation as things that I do, for example, medications, procedures to fix them. But I think our mindset has to change a little bit as to how can we prevent it at the onset.
So, doctor, you're obviously looking at differences in age as part of this study. Were you also looking at differences among the sexes? Do women perform differently, more likely, less likely to deal with AFib than men? Did you look at that?
We did not, but that's a great question. And I think that's all set up for something that we will be pursuing in the future, because I think and I suspect that there are gender differences in how we treat, maybe biases. There are differences in access to care often among patients. So looking among, you know, various demographics is going to be important going forward.
Thank you very much for the important work that you have already done. But more than that, thank you for helping us to understand why it is significant and what can be gleaned from it. Congratulations on this being published, and we look forward to hearing more from you as you move forward with additional research.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Bosley joining us from the University of Pittsburgh, where he's an assistant professor of medicine and also works in cardiac electrophysiology at UPMC. Really interesting stuff. AFib more common and dangerous in younger people than previously thought.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.